We are in Pechandikulam with a big audience of about 50 people to hear Daniel Greenberg from the Global Ecovillage Network GEN. He speaks about ecovillages and Oroville's relationship with the network. Afterwards, Serena Aurora shot a film about the network, and there was a discussion with the audience about the question if Oroville is an ecovillage.
Ecovillages aren't necessarily about being on the cutting edge of individual technologies. Ecovillages are saying, or asking the question, how do we put the pieces together? How do we create cultures, communities, where we can really integrate and live this way? Another way to think about ecovillages are as living laboratories for a sustainable future. And this is something I've been thinking about for decades now. We're all aware of this growing gap between the resource-rich and the resource-poor around the world. Some would say that gap is still increasing exponentially, which is really hard to believe. From the United States, I know that is happening quite a bit. Now, when I talk to people or I read about sustainable development, most people are talking about how do we raise the quality of life among the resource-poor, right? And I'm not arguing with this. I mean, this is absolutely necessary work. There are billions of people on this planet without access to clean water, to medical facilities, even to shelter, right? So absolutely, we need to raise the quality of life among the resource poor around the world. But what I don't hear people asking so much is, where is this heading? What are the goals? What are the models? And sometimes I've asked people who are involved in sustainable development, and they'll get upset with me. They're like, why are you asking these questions? We're just trying to do good work here, right? We're taking people in extreme poverty, and we're trying to raise their quality of life. But they often don't take it to the extreme of what is the model they're heading toward. And often, if you sort of scratch a little bit, they'll say, well, I don't know, we're just trying to raise the quality of life. Maybe if we're lucky, we'll get to first world standard lifestyles. Well, this is where it gets tricky, right? Because those of you who understand the current situation know that our planet isn't supporting our current population, much less the 8 to 10 billion that are expected by 2050, all with a car in the garage, all living a first world lifestyle. The planet just won't tolerate that. But we don't have a lot of good ideas of what other possibilities there are. And of course, very few people are asking the flip side of that question, which is as important, if not more, which is, how do we reduce the ecological impact of the resource-rich? Mostly Western countries, right? Not as many people, but per person, there's a much greater ecological impact. And so, the question, of course, isn't either or. The question is both and. We have to do both of these. And really, what's been happening is ecovillages have sort of staked out this middle ground, where they're saying, let's try to raise the quality of life above what I would call an equity baseline. How can we create lifestyles where everyone has access to the basic needs of their lives, has a sense of agency, has a sense of being able to change their environment, has a voice? And at the same time, how do we allow everyone to go below the carrying capacity of the planet? In this area, that's what I would call our livable zone. And we all have to get in there as a species if we're going to thrive as a species. And the sad truth is very, very few of us are. This is more of a goal, I believe, that ecovillages around the world are trying to do. And if you look at it this way, you can see that there's actually two different directions toward ecovillages. There's the top-down direction, which typically are communities of people living in resource-rich areas are saying, hey, we're already living pretty well. How do we maintain a high lifestyle but actually reduce our impact? And then there are people living in resource-poor areas saying, hey, we'd like to develop. We want a better quality of life, but how do we do that while maintaining a low footprint? And I find Oroville particularly interesting because in some ways it's one of the very few communities that I know that's doing both. So, what is GEN? The Global Ecovillage Network. It started at a community conference at Findhorn in northern Scotland in 1995. And it was a very popular conference. They oversubscribed by like two or three times. It was like 400 or 500 people that came. And what they did was they sort of divided the world a bit grandiosely into three regions. There was ENA, the Ecovillage Network of the Americas, Gen Oceania and Asia, which we are now in here, and also the network of Europe and Africa. And the idea was that they would figure out their networks going along. And that went on for a number of years, and actually it was only in the last 5 years or so that more networks emerged. So today, in addition to Gen International, which I would consider the more organizational side of Gen, there are networks in Gen Africa, Gen Europe, so they split. And then there's also Gen North America, where I'm from, which is basically US and Canada, that's possibly islands and maybe Mexico. And then Genoa, Oceania and Asia. And then, so Ecovillage Network of America split when CASA arose, which is a network within Latin America. So there's those five networks. And then NextGen, which is the youth movement of the global Ecovillage Network, for many years was considered as one of these regions. But it's not really a region because it's across the world. So they're now thinking of themselves more as a thematic group that's drawing in youth from around the world. Gen has relations with the United Nations through ECOSOC, which is, in fact, it's the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations. And it also has been making some connections with governments, notably Senegal and other places. Senegal actually has a ministry of eco-villages right at the top level of their government. And so this is allowing Gen to have some high-level discussions. And it is now reaching out to more than 10,000 communities in 110 countries. And so the idea is for it to be a network, to exchange resources, to support conferences happening, you know, and also to do some trainings. We're doing a virtual training now on a system called sociocracy, which is sort of moving beyond consensus decision making, and we're looking at that as a method of decision making and structure within the Gen networks. Whoops, it's on its own. So we're really looking at building intentional communities. This is actually at Vinhorn. I think I'm in this picture. This was at the 50th reunion a few years ago. Sorry. And it's, again, looking at building from the bottom up within traditional settlements and also looking at communities that are building in resource-rich areas, like in cities. And so, again, I think Orville has a particular contribution here because it's really looking at both of those directions at once. And I did want to mention Living Roots, which is this organization I started in 1998, and it partnered with University of Massachusetts in Amherst. And it ran study abroad programs in eco-villages around the world. And unfortunately, Living Roots, I left in 2012, and then it stopped going in 2014. And one of the reasons I'm here in Orville now is to look at the possibility of maybe reviving or reinventing one or several of these programs. So I'll just show you just one slide of each of the places we went, just to give you a sense of some of the diversity of eco-villages. So here's Orville with the solar dish and the Machmandir. You all know this place very well. Finhorn in northern Scotland with their wonderful whiskey barrel houses and Clooney Hill College, their nature sanctuary. There's around 650 people that live in or around Finhorn. You know, Finhorn is probably, along with Orville, the best known eco-village in the world. And remember what I was showing you before about that livable zone. They did a study a while ago looking at the ecological footprint of people living in at Finhorn. And they found that the average person living at Finhorn had half the ecological footprint of an average citizen in the UK, which was great. I mean, it made international news. And the sad truth is that if everyone lived the way they live at Finhorn, we'd still be using the resources of more than one planet. So even Finhorn, probably the cutting-edge eco-village in the world, or one of them, is still not in that livable zone. So, you know, I hate to say it, but really, as a species, we're in kindergarten. We're in kindergarten in terms of where we need to be in relationship to each other and the planet. Eco-villages like Orville, Finhorn, maybe middle school, or, you know, we're getting there, but we all need to go so much further. And so these are amazing campuses to learn about how to do that and to really experience it ourselves. Monteverde Institute is a community in Costa Rica that we take students to, and they look at rainforest ecology, among other things. Kibbutz Lotan is a very interesting kibbutz in the Arvin, the desert of Israel. And so they do a lot of xeriscaping and solar. These, if you can see them, we jokingly refer to as the dormitories. They're dormitories, but they're domes that students actually helped build and live in. There might be another picture a little bit later. This is where I was living for 14 years, at the Sirius community. Notice how it's spelled, S-I-R-I-U-S, it's not Sirius. And it's in Western Massachusetts. And it's a spin-off of Findhorn. And it's a smaller community, maybe 40 people live there, but it was a wonderful place to be and to raise our children too. Weiwei Kyoto is an art community in Mexico, founded by, what were they called? They were called the Illuminated Elephants, I think. They were a traveling theater band, and they would go around Central and Latin America, and they got tired of that, and so they decided to set up shop in Mexico. It's a wonderful community. Sachimama is a new community in Peru. I don't need to go into that too much. And then EcoCentury Peck is a permaculture demonstration site in Brazil, in the Cerrado near Brasilia. And Crystal Waters is also a fairly well-known community in Australia. Max Lindinger is probably one of the best permaculture teachers in the world. And it was designed using permaculture principles. And Igoyof is a traditional settlement outside of Dakar in Senegal. And they also have been looking at how to develop ecologically. And this initiative really helped spur this network across Senegal, which is now quite active. And then I wanted to mention Gaia Education, which was a spin-off of GEN. And Gaia Education was originally envisioned as the education arm of GEN, but it's become its own organization. And there'll be another talk. Where's Kavita? When will that be? Tuesday at 4. If you're interested in learning more about education in eco-villages specifically, Tuesday at 4 is here.
Yes.
A good time to learn more. But just some very quick things. So Gaia Education is now its own organization. One of the things that a number of us worked on for years was developing a curriculum. Well, if we had to teach what we do, how would that look? And so there is now quite extensive a course that you can download in English, and I think it's in 9 or 10 different languages now. And you can see that the typical offering has been a month-long training around the world, and I think there's around 5,000 or 6,000 people that have now gone through this training, and it's become more and more popular. The main curriculum is designed to be in 4 dimensions. There's the usual 3 suspects, right? The ecological, economic, and social. And then we added a worldview. There's 5 modules, so there's 20 modules altogether. And to us, this is the basic courses or the basic information that we need to impart for us to be able to learn how to live in harmony with each other and the planet. So everything from local food to whole systems design to local economics, education and social networks, leadership and empowerment, reconnecting with nature. You know, this is what we need to be teaching in kindergarten, I think. Gaia Education has become its own organization. It's a little interesting now because GEN is doing more of its own education work. And actually, Gaia Education is doing more development work. So they're sort of kind of coming back into or overlapping a lot with each other. So we're trying to explore that and how we might remerge those organizations. So GEN works with those 4 dimensions and also a holistic dimension. And just to show you just some images to give you a sense in terms of ecology, here's at the farm in Tennessee, which is the classic hippie community in the U.S. There's a guy, Albert Bates, who does a lot of work with biochar there and also around the world as a way of sequestering CO2. Tamara in Portugal is doing a lot of amazing work in many directions, and one of them being replenishing water tables. Findhorn has 4 large windmills, which makes it a net positive producer of electricity in that community. In Ghana, they're replanting forests with native species, and this is, of course, a major effort in Oroville. In Kenya, nourishing street children. There's a lot of food to farm-to-school initiatives of how can we really connect these communities with the mainstream as well. Nepal, looking at solidarity and sharing. We're moving into the social area now. Kartang Eco-Village in the Gambia, which I had the privilege of helping teach on an EDE, as the Eco-Village Design Education course, working with villages along the coast. They call it the People's Coast. Lots more to say about that, but a lot of interesting work around ecotourism there. And I mentioned Kibbutz Lotan earlier. This is what the dormitories end up looking like. They're quite beautiful. And again, it's, you can't really see it from here, but if you got up, it's just this little oasis in the desert. So they're forced to really be ecological in a lot of ways. Social entrepreneurship, for example, at Sikkim in Egypt, especially looking at livelihood for women. Some places like Dominor in Italy have developed their own currency. And so local currency is an amazing thing that helps keep wealth local and helps support initiatives in that community. This is a place that I've been to a number of times, wonderful eco-village in Ithaca in upstate New York. And it's a type of co-housing community, but with a lot of ecological features. Whoops. And then there's a lot of new initiatives within Gen now. One of them is that we're looking at how to respond to crises, because there's lots of crises happening around the world, and with climate change, we expect there to be even more in the coming years. And so one of the recent initiatives is called RefuGen. And so there's actually about 8 to 12 people that are in Lesbos, which you may know is one of the islands in Greece where a lot of the refugees are coming across from Syria. And so they're just there to help. And we're creating protocols. And, you know, we're not thinking of Gen as a first responder. We don't have those skills to come in and set up, you know, those things that are needed right away. But when an area that's been hit by a disaster, whether it's a natural disaster or through some political turmoil or war, and then when they're at that point where they're thinking about redeveloping, Gen has a lot of value to say, you know what, let's think about this. You don't have to repeat some of the mistakes you made before. Here's an opportunity, actually, to develop in ways that can even be more ecological and maybe more nourishing to those to your communities as well. So this, I think, is a very exciting area that Gen is moving into. So it's really, it's got a grand vision. We're still evolving, you know, we're still just trying to figure out how it all comes together. It's really kind of a lot of juggling with the networks happening in different regions, and then how do we blend that bottom up and the top down in terms of really wanting to support the networks however they want to emerge, but also creating some consistency across the networks. So someone who's working in micro hydro in one area can connect with someone who's working with micro hydro in another area, and they can really find each other and do things like that. So it's an interesting challenge. And there's a wonderful quote by Arundhati Roy, "Another world is not only possible, but she's on her way. And on a quiet day, I can hear her breathing." Thank you.
How is it possible to volunteer for Gen?
Gen International has a small staff that's working in the FinCorn office. I'm the internal communications director at the moment. And we have a small staff of about 8 to 10 people. It's slowly growing. And then we have a lot of volunteers that help around with the different, within Gen International and also the regional networks, and then within the different eco-villages. I get a lot of emails of people wanting to be volunteers in specific communities around the world. So there's people that want to go to communities and help, but then for Gen itself, we have a few specific ways people can plug in. Basically, like, for example, translation is a big part of what we need for Gen. The communications and design group, IT, we also, for the conferences, usually have a team of volunteers that come together and help organize.
Is Gen supported by the United Nations?
Well, Gen has a relationship to the UN where it's actually advising through ECOSOC, as Dan mentioned. So there's been a kind of consultative status that Gen has where it gives kind of feedback and information about coming from the communities that's involved with to the UN on sustainability. And especially there's a relationship developing around the what's the UN's?
One other thing that Gen is doing is it's really helping, it's looking at where to find funds. And so at the recent COP21 conference, the countries came together and decided to create a green fund, which is I don't know how many billion dollars, but quite a few. And if you look at the criteria for what they're trying to support, Gen is a perfect fit. So we're looking at how to further develop those that relationship, people that we already have connecting with the UN. But also, Jen does other fundraising for specific projects or gatherings, conferences in different places as well. So that's another value that Jen is offering.
How many people live in Jen eco-villages at all?
Oroville is a member of Jen and has over 2,000 people. So that's one, and I would say it's, in a way, it's considered the biggest community that's a member of Jen. And then you have small communities of 10 people, 7 to 10 people, living in you know, small, few houses or farming communities. There's a really big range. You have co-housing communities with a few hundred, places like Domenburg in Italy, which has about, 500 to 800 people, a lot of smaller, there are many members that are smaller communities in the world, but it's such a range. There's not a model eco-village, as Dan was talking about. There's such a range. I mean, you also have indigenous communities in Senegal, in India. There's a network in Orissa that's a few thousand villages that have joined a network called THREAD, which is in communities. The villagers basically said, we don't want to develop in the standard way, and so that's several thousand people part of that network.
How can a village choose to become a member with Jen?
How to become a member. So basically it would be getting in touch with the regional network that depending on where it is. So in Jen Africa, there are villages that are communicating with Jen Africa and joining on. And if we're talking about Asia, then the Genoa network, maybe Chris is a representative for Genoa.
Genoa is going through a whole restructuring at the moment as an organisation. As a network, we're looking at how do we open that up more and move Genoa perhaps to more support the connection and networking. We have gathering times coming up in April in the Philippines along the lines of ComFest or something. So more of an open space sort of gathering where...
I also wanted to mention the Jen Ambassador Program which was linking back to the volunteers. It's a program that's been around for a few years, but it's a way for people that are excited and interested in Jen to start stepping in a bit more. And there's not any requirements besides knowing the network and having someone that you know within the network that can kind of be a mentor. Maybe we take a snack break?
Well, the idea is to come back and actually focus a little bit more on Jen and Oroville.
Well, it's almost why we're here. You know, why are we here? Why did this happen? And I think it's useful. And you can then tumble back about 50 years to the beginning of Oroville. And we had an organization called Hexiad. And this was, at that time, Akwesasne, Findhorn, and Oroville. And there was people were moving between those places. This is almost 50 years ago. And we're talking about the late 60s, early 70s. And we went to Findhorn then. I've been to Findhorn over the years, 3 or 4 times, at sometimes conferences. And this is very real. The people from Taumera came here in the 70s, 80s. People from Findhorn were coming here a lot. We're having lunch with Serena the other day, and she said, well, yeah, I've had this fantastic time in Oroville the last, you know, month making this film, but I couldn't find anybody that knew anything about Jen. And because there was this other question in all these latest meetings in the last years was, how are the eco-villages reaching out? And then you think of the mother or the dream of Oroville and those things. Oroville is a university. These places are incubators, the Findhorns, the Taumeras, the Oroville's. And how to take it further, but when this question of how are the eco-villages reaching out, people were fascinated by the way that Oroville's role, and it's the fact that it's a government institution, a government institution. As the biggest supposed democracy in the world discussed the next stage in evolution and the, yeah, whatever, for weeks on end and passed an act of parliament and created the Oracle Foundation Act. Wow, that's amazing. That's long, long time ago. And now we're at a point where just 2 years ago, the government of Tamil Nadu, a government of looking after 60 million people, came to Oracle and said, wow, what you kids are doing is really interesting. Places like Fintan and Oracle have changed so many lives. Why aren't there more Oracleans here today? Now that's not all of your problem, but there is a problem. People have different roles. In Tamara, perhaps they're working on male-female relationships. Here, perhaps, Oracle is working on freedom. And that, it's an interesting one. But these different aspects that we can show, we have such a freedom. Freedom granted by, as I said before, the government of India giving the blessings for this because of Sri Aurobindo, because of whatever, whatever. But it's an amazing grace. She said, Dulce, could you please animate this conversation a bit more between Oracle and the Gen network? Because it's about learning. There's so much that Oracle can learn from all these other communities, as well as being able to offer from the city that the Earth needs to a place that recognizes its bioregion.
When I used to talk about Gen in Oracle, a reflection, often people would say, well, I don't think Oracle is an eco-village.
We believe, yes, in the spirit of searching sustainable quality of life, being to create a universal city as green as possible. So there is a bridge, and that's why I came here.
So say more, why you think, where is it that you think Oracle is not an eco-village? I don't quite understand. Where do you think it differs?
You see, I have visited many of them.
Yes.
As a Oracleian, we have to come out from our territoriality, including ourselves. So there is to take away the invisible walls, which we all have, create a network of consciousness, of inspiring human beings to a next step of evolution.
I wanted to see, to ask Kavita, because in a way she organized this possibility for this presentation, and she's been stepping in a bit to see what her perspective was, and if she had anything she wanted to add. I think it's very important here.
Yeah, it's difficult to speak after Jocelyn. But my experience of Gen and eco-villages other than Oracle is very new. I was very frustrated growing up in Oracle because I didn't have the perspective or space for reflection to really, you know, appreciate and see something different. So when I went out for university, that urge to come back here became stronger, and it also took shape in my thesis, you know, trying to understand how Oracle is different and whatnot. And then I discovered this network, that there were other communities worldwide also trying very hard to do things differently. So when I came back to Oracle following university, I found that nobody knew what Gen meant. And now that sort of groundwork has been done for myself, it would be very interesting to give the rest of the youth a chance to reflect on our community through this lens of the eco-village design education. Because it wasn't obvious for me, and I don't think it's obvious for many other young people who are born here, to really look at Oracle as something to celebrate or be very grateful for. We take it for granted, I think, many of us, until we come back. Because we experience that the world is a very tough place and things are seriously going wrong. Talking about the Sustainable Livelihood Institute, and there's so many opportunities for continuing this horrible experiment in an educational.
So there were a few hands in the Oracle.
it's built for many more people than it
15,000. Just 50,000.
Okay. And if it does grow, can it really be an eco-village anymore? I mean,
an eco-village, very much like Orville has become a community of communities.
Yeah. Mm.
So in some ways, so Orville is like the premier.
That's a very good point. Communities are of community because it's already there.
Right.
Our village, it's many communities.
I mean, the thing of number, the thought that came in was it coincide? First we'll take Manhattan, then we'll take Berlin. Come on, I mean, if this, if this is going to work, do you think New York's going to be left out? I mean, it's not a matter of numbers. If they're going to be beautiful places, they're going to be retrofitted into garden cities. Yeah, even Delhi's going to be livable in, or Chennai, you know, which someone's been working on. That's the vision. It's not a numbers game. This is mother invoked, like Luigi said, it's going to be green as possible. Oh, I can remember her saying, I want you to build a city in a garden and a garden in the city. That was all. And that's the thing I remembered her saying and said, oh, that sounds a good trip. Yeah, let's get on with it. Yeah. But 50,000 or New York. I think it comes back to a sense of place. Mm-hmm. And what we, in our teaching, we try to give the importance of a sense of place. From my observation at this point, I think there's more refugees on the planet than there were ever, certainly from, after World War II. I was a refugee until I came here, until I found this was my place. I was, and most of us were. We were refugees from the 60s. We've been through it, refugees from the 60s. We found this place, this sort of vision, and that was everywhere the refugees. The Tamil Nadu is full of refugees, whether it's from Sri Lanka, or the people from Dharmapuri, this I'm talking about country regions that have all moved to Chennai, to Coimbatore, to Pondicherry, to make more money. Economic refugees. And that's the crazy part. We're trying to, through our, say, this institute or this training with the government, to bring sense of place back to villages all over Tamil Nadu and then India. And there are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of them. And they can be all eventually eco-villages. If people are proud of where they are. And that's what's interesting.
A few years ago, we had a workshop in an Italian community called Comunità Etica Vivente, the Living Ethics Community, 600 people. What was incredible was that we discovered that we had common challenges, let's call it. And these common challenges was our own human resources.
I guess I would ask us to really open our framework to think about what is it that we're doing together. And for me, it's not like we're trying to get people to feel that way. For me, that is our birthright. That is our essential beingness, is to be interdependent with each other and all life. And so for me, when someone is not naturally expressing that, it's like, well, what is getting in the way? And it tends to be, our culture and the stories that we've been told and consumerism, but it's a stripping away. And that's what's so lovely and amazing when I see people in eco-villages, when they sort of pop, when they wake up, when they recognize, oh, this is the way I've always wanted to be, and I didn't know this was possible, or that there are other people thinking this way. To me, this is completely natural. And so in some ways, we're coming out of a period of amnesia as a species where we've forgotten. And so places like Orville are places of remembrance.
I'd like to follow up on that because I have been now almost 20 years each summer going to different communities, maybe sometimes out of curiosity at the beginning at least. But the experience I could have almost in every community I went is the remembrance that I came to Orville for human unity. And going into those villages, this is what I experienced more than I experienced in Oregon, unfortunately. So I have been going there in so much love. I couldn't believe this, you know, that it's possible that a collective is celebrating so much and is giving you so much support, you know. I did not know what that was. Yeah? Because this is not what I'm experiencing here, and many times I'm experiencing actually quite the contrary. I have to stand for myself, and I got strong over time. No doubt about that. I'm famous for it. But that's not what I want, you know. What I want is to feel connected with you, that I'm connected with everybody, I'm connected with the heart. I'm like you, I'm just a human being making an experience of humanity, you know, of me being human, you know. And that's what I love. And we are here talking a lot about that human unity. But I do have sometimes difficulty seeing it, you know, so I needed to experience it somewhere else. And I got it. And that's a great thing. I got it. I'm feeling so grateful for that, you know. I'm feeling grateful being part of Oregon, and because I was an Oregon representative for many years, I could experience that. Our community is working on issues we have not even scratched on yet, you know. While we're having a tremendous spirituality here, you know, it's unbelievable, and I could not find it anywhere else. What I could find, you know, is different concept, you know, a challenge, which I could not find here. For example, the gender issue, not even touched here. Love between partners and, you know, the love school, for example, in Hamera. I was absolutely impressed. What is a love school? Wow. Even that, yeah.
I was saying these things like, it's hard work. What are you going to do? It's hard work. There are electric power cuts, and I thought I was going to find solar electricity everywhere. And
this is all solar.
This is solar, great, fantastic.
Totally solar.
Yeah, yeah. The guest houses don't have hot water. There are all sorts of things. You know, as you say, the gender things, you know, all the rubbish everywhere, like the rest of India, you know. I know it's a tradition that they always used to chuck the rubbish out for the animals to eat it. But now that they chuck out paper and plastic, and they just burn it, you know, and it's the burning of it makes dioxins and the cancerogenous. Now, there's all these sort of things. I'm really quite surprised, actually. And I was expecting something else. I mean, it's got a lovely, wonderful atmosphere. People are really nice. Yeah, great, far out. But I think you've got a lot of work to do here.
You stay around a few more days. We invite you to stay around a few more days. Yeah.
I would say, well, okay, you lived in Oregon for a while. What is it? And I think it's something maybe Oregonians don't even see. But when I talk about Oregon, I say, well, when they started here, there was nothing. And now there's a jungle, a big, beautiful, thriving jungle here that all of you, you know, the people, the pioneers started. And I think it's not seen that humanity can actually regrow the ecosystems that we've been destroying on this planet. And I know people come here and there's trees, okay. But if you came here 50 years ago, there was nothing. And it's hard to see because it's on a time scale that the Earth has that's different. But that is like, it's not a small area. Oregon is a large area and it's a forest. And people, I mean, that's something that all communities can learn from in this world. How can we regrow our planet? It's possible. And so it's really important to see, yes, there's work to be done. And at the same time, it's like honoring what's happened here also.
A good argument for getting involved in Gen as well and experiencing and learning about other eco-villages and communities and being in them and living in them, because every community is a journey. I've never found a community that's not struggling with something, and if they're not struggling with something, there's bound to be a bomb just about to hit.
You said, like, I expected so many things and they're not there. And you commented that there will always be challenges. Right? I've never seen a community that doesn't have struggles, and I've never seen a person that doesn't have struggles. When you network, and you know the family systems also, when you network between different organizations and communities, you have to understand the mindset.
In any community, there's a continuum, I find, of people. Some, on one end, there's people who just want to be there, they want to plant the trees, they want to make things happen there, and that's great. We need more people like that. And on the other end of the community are people who are butterflies and networkers. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say that there is a community of networkers. And so...
Okay, so a couple of closing things.
We have the next talk on Tuesday afternoon at the same time between 4 to 6. And it will be more focused on the Gaia educational aspect. So, taking it a little bit deeper. There is also a workshop being offered, and for those who have the time over the next week, and are genuinely very interested in going deeper, that will take place on Wednesday and Thursday over the full day. Daniel's talk is on Wednesday on
carbon consciousness,
local solutions for
global warming.
It's a big title. That's at the Unity Pavilion, so more centrally in Orville, at 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock.
And Kavita is really a contact point. So if anyone's interested in Jen and Orville, please stay.
Thank you all very much for coming. We'll close the space now. Of course, if there are more conversations that want to happen, that's free. Do you want to add something?
Or just maybe have a moment of silence.
We appreciate the space that we've had.